Here we go. Write to us at buynorthwest.com. Come on, send us a letter. Got to write him to get him, as they used to tell us at Breezy Point Camp, Tom. Got to write him to get him. Don't sit there and cry. Write your mom and dad. Tell them what a great time you're having. Stop crying. Write him to get him.
A lot of crying at your camp, huh?
A lot of crying. God, I hated it.
You hated camp?
Sleepaway camp? Oh.
Yeah, I didn't like my camp either. Primarily because you had to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning or whatever, where they played the damn reveille, and you had to make your bed, and they check behind your ears. Oh my God!
Oh, yeah, that's the worst. And then they put you back to bed. That was it. So those were the three things. It was play the horn, make your bed, check behind your ears. All right, everybody, get some shut eye. It's gonna be a long day tomorrow. Playing the horn, making your bed, and checking behind your ears. We had fun activities like archery and wood
belt
carving,
making.
Lanyards. Here's another lanyard. Highlight of coming back from Breezy Point Camp, my dad smoking a cigar, throws the cigar out the window, unbeknownst to my father, blows back in to the back window where my brother and I are, and sets my sleeping bag on fire. And I don't know, sleeping bags back then, I guess they were made with
things highly flammable.
The opposite of asbestos. I don't know what it was. And my dad yelling at my brother and I, like it's our fault that the sleeping bag is fully engulfed in the back. What are you guys doing back there? Yeah. Oh, Dad, we thought it'd be fun to set the sleeping bag on fire in a Ford Pinto.
Before we go to camp.
Yeah, no, this is coming home.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Picking me up and bringing me home from Lake Winnipesaukee there. Oh, gosh. Hannah Scott. Got to get Hannah in. I think I'm blowing all that time telling stories. Nobody wants to hear my stupid stuff. Great mood. Gonna get my tractor out there. It is coming down here in Cleveland. There's your weather report. Yeah. All right. So, Hannah, did you get a chance? The big question is, did you get a chance to ask the question about Nicole Thompson, which is about Dory Monson's producer?
I did. I did not pull the answer for you, though. I didn't know you knew it, Valley.
Oh.
So I was saving it for her. Let's see. I can try to get it to Jacob,
them.
But I did.
Fine,
I did.
We're going to take that from them. All right, so let's talk about the overall. So the governor, with his mask on, again, opening up more counties.
Yeah, so this was like the good news train press conference, the whole beginning of it. So first round of good news coming for almost the entire state.
Effective Monday, 7 of our 8 regions of our Healthy Washington plan will open up in phase 2. This will mean increased economic activity, increase access to restaurants and the like. We're very happy about this. This means that 92% of all the people in the state of Washington will be able to move forward with some additional activities. Very pleased about this. The reason we've been able to do this is that these regions have met at least 3 out of 4 of the metrics of performance that our phase plan have set forth.
So, not such good news for the entire state.
The only region that has not been able to move forward is the South Central region. That's Ellensburg, Yakima, Tri-Cities, Walla Walla area. And we're looking forward to them moving forward as soon as possible. The metrics that have dictated this decision are that 14-day trends in new cases for 100,000 residents and new COVID hospitalizations needed to meet the metric, as well as 7-day averages for ICU capacity and percent positive COVID tests. The South Central region currently meets 2 of those 4. We just need to get them over 1 more so that they can join the other 92% of the state. We look forward to that.
So they're looking forward to that, as is everyone in that region, which is, again, going to be the Tri-Cities, Walla Walla, Yakima, that area. And I did just hear from Senator Brown. This is going to be our state senator for Benton County area, I believe, says this is heartbreaking news for the Tri-Cities. Moving to phase two, she said, would have given the small business owners and workers a glimmer of some hope in the midst of the pandemic shutdown, and that if the governor means what he says about wanting to open up the rest of the state, he should immediately make more vaccines and additional resources available to the region, and that she will continue to push him to do that and push for the passage of Senate Bill 5114, which would move the entire state to phase two, which now really applies just to her region. So,
Hey, Hannah, just on that quickly, is there that for that particular district, is there like more like resistance, mask resistance or distancing resistance in that particular community? Has it become like a political thing? And is that why they are behind, whereas 7/8 of the state aren't? Or is that irrelevant to what's going on here?
I don't know that I would say that that's irrelevant. No. So this region includes Yakima and then there's the Tri-Cities areas, Benton and Franklin County. I believe back at the beginning of the pandemic, they filed suit or passed a resolution in one of their councils, right, to not follow the original mandates.
Okay.
And Yakima County is where we had the explosion in cases a couple of times. You have a lot of your agricultural workers out there, a lot of Hispanic folks who live in tight quarters, things like that, where they were not masking for a very long time. I'm not sure if that's changed since then, but so that there's been some resistance in the past. Yeah, for sure. And on the good news train, though, there was some more good news.
Hold on a second.
Oh, yes, more.
Let me just say something. To draw the direct connection between supposed resistance to wearing a mask and COVID, and overall, I don't know if we have the numbers that show that they're not wearing the mask. I know that you can't go into grocery stores in Eastern Washington without wearing it. You can't go in. The restaurants have been closed down. So all the same places that the governor's lockdowns affecting people having to wear masks, that's all still happening. It's not like it's the wild, wild west in Yakima. People are still wearing the mask. Are they in closer contact with one another? Do you have more people living in more confined spaces? Yes, right? Because what are they? 13% of the population is Hispanic and tend to travel more. And therefore, it's not about a mask thing. It is more because you don't get COVID by going to a restaurant that's already been proven very small percent, 1.4% of transmission occurring in restaurants. It's in the home. That's where we've been told to stay. So let's not just say, oh, because Eastern Washington is a bunch of rebels, this is what they get. And by not wearing masks, the governor is showing that they're not keeping up with his program, right? So we're not making that direct connection, right? Are we doing that?
No, I'm not saying that at all.
That's good.
Tom asked if there had
been. That's why I asked the question, John.
Yeah.
There's never been a direct line drawn to that.
Early on, right. But early on, it takes 14 days to get it, then to get over it. So early on, so anybody that got it earlier on doesn't have it now. So the thing is, right now, why are the numbers high in Yakima? That's the question, but it's not about people not wearing masks. They're all wearing their masks, doing the stuff they're supposed to do, but it has to do with more of the population and the density of the population in Yakima. But go ahead.
I will say this. Early on, the governor called Yakima specifically out for not following the mask mandate. It was a very big deal. But that was months and months ago. I don't know what the current situation is. Okay. Back to the good news train. We've got good news on case counts and compliance.
They have gone down fairly significantly over the last few weeks, and we couldn't be more pleased about that. We're doing that because people have been following science. They have been masking up. Business owners have been complying with the healthy rules and being very innovative in this way. People are showing smart ways to protect themselves and their families by not having unnecessary gatherings in their homes. And because we have been doing these things, because we have been following the science, this is a large part why these numbers are going down and why we're being able to open up 92% of our state to further economic activity.
So that was good news. There was also good. Yes.
May I counter?
Yeah.
He doesn't know. He doesn't know if people are having less parties. Really? People having less social parties. He's aware of that. The Super Bowl, people were sitting around. Just two people were there.
We wouldn't know yet parties. If the Super Bowl, right? So that was just last Sunday. It would take us.
Well, we also know we never got the Thanksgiving
to get that.
We didn't get the Thanksgiving surge. We didn't get the Christmas surge. We didn't get the new. We might have got a little before more people in New Year's, but the Thanksgiving didn't happen, and people still gathered. They still traveled, and the same thing with Thanksgiving and Christmas. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
I will say this. I went to the grocery store on Saturday before Super Bowl and over by the mall by my house, and there were a lot of people buying stuff up for Super Bowl parties. So we'll see in a couple of weeks what happens with that. It didn't seem to me that people were avoiding them myself. But at any rate, I have – oh, so vaccines. That's the other thing he said, was that vaccines were doubling. We're in the high percentile for getting doses from the government. And I think we were right about to hit putting a million doses into people's arms. So that's trending upwards. We're waiting for more from the feds. They should be coming. And on that note, I did ask him about the Nicole Thompson's question, which was about her parents or grandparents, the 81 and 65 with some underlying health conditions, the Skagit County. They had kept getting their vaccination appointments bumped to way back to like April every time, and they were frustrated. So they called over to the mass vaccination site in Wenatchee yesterday, I believe, and said, how many appointments do you have available for tomorrow? And they said like 246 or something like that. And they were like, whoa. So they drove over there today and they got vaccinated. So I asked about the why so many in Wenatchee and not any over here in Skagit County. And this is what the governor said.
We're going to have these situations 1,000 times a day in the state of Washington. 1,000 times a day, someone will call a clinic close to their house and then find out someone farther away from their house has more doses available. And the reason that is these doses are become available at different times. We can't predict exactly how many people will show up at the clinic at that particular time. And so the experience that these folks had is going to be replicated thousands of times a day. And I would love to tell you that we could solve that problem. We can't. And I'm just so happy that these folks did get a life-saving vaccine. It is very difficult to have an individualized decision across the state of Washington to get the right dose to the right house at the right time. Very difficult, and we're doing the best job we can.
He went on to say, and I want to mention this because equity became a big part of the conversation in this press conference today during Q&A. So they're trying to make sure that they're putting vaccine doses in areas for those disproportionately affected by COVID, right? So your people of color, the people who've got the higher case rates, things like that. So that has something he indicated after what he said right there. He said equity also plays into this. So I don't know if that means they're putting more doses over in that particular area because there's more Hispanics and they're disproportionately affected by COVID, or exactly what, because there was no follow-up. But that would be my take on what he said.
I hear Benton County really needs it.
Yeah. Yep, that's what I hear too. I want to get to one more piece and then you guys can have some questions. There was more good news this time as it goes for renters and small business.
I'm today authorizing the Department of Commerce to distribute an additional $87 million for additional rental assistance and additional business assistance. That distribution will be split evenly for rental assistance and also business assistance through the state's disaster response account. We need to use this funding to keep our relief efforts going while we're waiting for further federal assistance.
And that federal assistance expected in the spring. There's also $2.2 billion in COVID relief that the state legislature just passed that would adds $325 million in more rental assistance, another $240 million for business assistance. That's expected to be signed next week sometime.
All right. That's mostly good news, this report.
It was really a very exciting press conference. He was in a very good mood.
That's right. Good.
By the way, to let you know, the poverty rate in Yakima is about 24%. If you are a person of color in Yakima, about 34% poverty rate. King County poverty rate is 11%. And with poverty comes poor health and more confined living quarters with more people. Mm-hmm. So just generally, that's what you have. So that's
and
why
that's why a it's a disproportionate effect. Yeah, that's and that's
right.
what they
Four,
say.
So 93,000 people live in Yakima County. 404 people have died. And again, the numbers for those people that don't know, if you're under age 20, chances of surviving 99.995% survival rate. If you're 50 or younger, you're doing pretty well as well. You're about 97.9% chance of survival. So again, it's a small infinitesimal percentage of people that die of it. It's a nasty way to spend a couple of days with deep cough and off fever and everything else that goes with it. But again, if you have some type of additional health problems, you will struggle and possibly be part of the 0.0006% of people that could die from it from any age group. Just the perspective again. And I know he loves science, so I thought I'd give you a little bit of science there for you. Go ahead, Tom.
It's just a low bar, though. I mean, it's a low bar to say you don't die. I mean, most of us have all sorts of illnesses that we don't want to get. That we don't die from. It's not because we're afraid we're going to die. They're just uncomfortable, and we don't know enough about it to know if they're long-lasting.
No, I'm looking at the positive. It's a happy day of news. I'm looking at the positive. That 99% of people get over it or don't die from it, right?
Yeah. Well, more than 4,000 people have died from it in our state from the 320-some-odd-thousand of cases that we've had here. And there's a lot of concern about possibly increased death associated with particularly the South African variant, which is now in California, right. Not yet here. So that's the kind of things he's talking about.
I got it. And more than 50% of those deaths occurred in nursing homes.
You are correct in that. But there's help for renters and small business.
That's the good news. And you got Nicole's question answered, and we stole it from the Dory Monson show. Thank you.
I know. I'm going to blame you, man.
That's all right. Bring it on. Tracy Taylor with more good news. Yep, thanks, Sean. All right, let's get Rachel Bell in here. I know that she wanted to have a slumber party yesterday in the parking lot at Muckleshoot Casino. I don't know if everybody showed up.
Oh, they showed up.
How was it? Was it good?
Well, it was good, but, you know, it's COVID time, so I only invited, like, two people. So they all showed up. It was so fun. It was so
socially
fun.
Socially distancing. Muckleshoot Casino, by the way, is the biggest and best in Northwest when it comes to having fun, whether it's food or just going in there and just really enjoying everything that they have to offer. It's Muckleshoot Casino, biggest and best, like Rachel, in the Northwest.
Yeah.
Arvell?
Yeah.
It is your airplane. Go ahead.
Okay. So in the neighborhood of which our very own Tom Tangney lives, there is one of those streets that the city has shut down during the pandemic. It is a pedestrian street now, so you can't drive down it any longer. And there's a house on that street that opened a little cider operation out of the detached garage. So it's called Yonder Cider. They actually do all the production in Wenatchee, but it's really cute. I was walking by one day and I noticed it. The garage door is up and they're selling cans and growlers of cider. And when I saw it, I even thought, is that legal? Because, like, why isn't everybody selling? You know, why doesn't everybody have a business out of their garage? But I figured, of course it is. Well, it wasn't until last week when I heard that it was shutting down that I investigated further. So even though Yonder looks like, So here's what they did. This is what they did to open.
So we have our liquor control license. We also have a city business license. And so when we started looking into this, we did call the city to ask if this was possible because we knew we were in a single family zoned area, but we knew the street was changing and the nature of our street was changing because it was a stay healthy street. And so it was a bit of a gray area and they were like, okay, go ahead. The way we'll know about you or something will happen is if a lot of people complain. Well, one person decided they didn't like Yonder Bar and complained a lot to the city, the liquor control board, the health department and everything. And it's kind of made our lives difficult. And that's why we're shutting down.
That is Caitlin Brom. She is the founder of Yonder. So the last day, unfortunately, is on the Yonder Bar is. I know. I'm still recovering from light as a feather, stiff as a board. I think I might actually have a ghost inside of me.
When's
right
the last
now.
Day?
thank you. It is on Monday, February 15th.
It's great to have you. We love you here.
Okay. So as I stood there outside of the garage, I was there for maybe 45 minutes. Countless people stopped in the middle of the interview to say, I can't believe you're closing. I love you so much. And every single person is a parent with kids. This is not a neighborhood where people are drinking in the streets and there's trash everywhere. It is quite the opposite. And so what happened is this one guy complained. She figured out that he doesn't live within five blocks of her. She doesn't know who he is. But she lives two blocks from St. John's, a private school that is open right now, and two blocks from a church. But those, the church and the school, neither of them actually care that she's there.
This makes our community better. This brings the community together. It's a place for us to greet and have a chance to meet our community. And the idea of shutting it down is this a chance of shutting down the community. It doesn't make any sense. We're in COVID time. We should leave it open. And if someone thinks it's a chance to close it, they do not care about the community. They only care about themselves.
That is a local dad, Ben Kutovic. So even the principal and the vice principal of the school contacted Caitlin and said, we don't have a problem with this. But the deal is, this one guy who complained is complaining on behalf of the school and pretending that it is the school that is complaining.
We do know from both the principal and the vice principal that it is not a St. John-led initiative. If they personally have their own issue, like, great, that's totally fine. They can take up their own issue, but to make it seem positioned as a school initiative is just wrong, because for those of us who purposely put their children in a school like this to teach them that you should love thy neighbor, it's very hypocritical, especially when we have other establishments that are just as close. We fully support you.
That is Melissa Hare, and she's a St. John parent. So it's kind of a sticky subject because, as you heard, the city said, go for it until someone complains, which I was confused by because usually the city is so strict and, you know, dotting I's and crossing T's. They're not like, let's just see what happens.
You know, eyeballing it from here. I don't know. That seems like a good amount. Like, that is, that
alcohol,
is an odd
alcohol.
Response.
Who cares?
Yeah, you know, see what happens.
Wow. Right. And so there's no trouble. There's no, like I said, no litter. There's no open container. People take it and go home. But the problem is now that this guy has complained is that you can't have a home business in this. It's a zoning issue. You can't have a home business that you can see from the outside. So they said she can still operate if she always keeps the garage door shut. So people would have to knock and someone would have to be inside waiting. Yeah, exactly.
Do that. Yeah. Secret knock, little thing you slide across the door, the eyeballs there, other person's eyeball, and then come on in. There you go.
I just keep imagining Bernie and his mittens just cold inside of the garage as somebody knocks. He's like, finally, a customer. So what she's trying to do is work with the city to change policy because she argues that, you know, yes, it's a residential street, but there are more people now on that street than there are up on Greenwood, which is the commercial district. So it's not like she's bringing all this traffic to a quiet residential street.
That's a great point. Now, I listened very carefully. It sounds like you said she threw in the towel before it had been finally adjudicated. Is that right? Like, it wasn't worth the hassle. She was forced to go through all these bureaucratic arguments. Or did the city actually say, yeah, I hate to tell you this, but you're out of compliance. You have to shut down.
That one, the city said that they had to shut down. Otherwise, she would not. So let me throw this in there. So first of all, they are going to open a tap room in 6 months. But she said the only reason they could afford that property is because of the money that they have spent doing this little pop-up bar. So they've collected 2,700 signatures in the last week on this letter of support that they're going to give the city. So if you go to mynorthwest.com/Rachel Bell, not now, wait 20 minutes. I haven't gotten the story up yet. But mynorthwest.com/Rachel Bell, you can sign the petition and you can also get the location, because you should go and stop by and go get a cider, because it's just really cute, the whole operation that they have set up. I mean, it's probably going to be snowing, but who cares? Just go.
Yeah.
Have you had the cider?
Absolutely. I've gone there 3 or 4 times. I love it. They have 4 different kinds. You can get, you know, a sampler of one each. They sell them in like 4 sets. I think it's just a cute little community boost. And I agree, that street is a different street now because it's all pedestrian. It is. It's literally busier than Greenwood, which is the main business district. That's a great justification for kind of inching the rules. And it's such a cute operation. I love just going up there. Yeah. You're walking at night. It's like at 6:30 at night, and you just see down the block this shining light. And you wonder, what is that? And you open up it, and it's just this is very discreet, clean little bar that just serves one person at a time. You don't drink it there. You just purchase it. I just love it. It just, you know, there's a little light in my heart over Christmas.
What's the name of the guy that complained? Do we know the name of the guy that complained?
Yeah, it's Jason Rance.
Finding the last name. I can barely hear you. How do you find the last name?
R-A-N-T-Z.
It's a shame.
Rachel Rance. Oh, look at Rachel calling out her husband.
Don't you agree that Rance. It feels like Europe?
Yes.
It feels like Europe. It's like this street where everyone's walking in the middle of the street and like, hello, neighbor. And then there's like this cute little bar with like a very lovely logo, and I don't know. I was hoping that there was going to be
kids,
more.
I don't know whether you've done radio, but hold on. This thing's still on.
Do we have to stop talking?
Yes, Tracy Taylor wants to talk about traffic and how it's not at all like Europe.
I didn't mean to ask you. What's a commercial?
No honor among thieves, or at least comedians steal other comedians' jokes all the time, although they're not supposed to, and it makes you feel horrible when you get your stuff stolen. And the thing is, it's a low thing to do. It's just like, you just don't do it, but everybody sees each other's acts, and they're like, that's pretty good. You might get close to it, but you just don't do it, because if you get caught doing it, it just makes you, it gives you a reputation, and there are certain comedians in the market that have reputation for stealing people's stuff.
Yeah.
You just don't do it. Saturday Night Live did a parody on this guy's work. Ted, what is it? Alexandro? Is that his name?
Yeah. It looks like it. Yeah.
So he wakes up Sunday morning and he gets a bunch of messages telling him that Saturday Night Live has stolen his bit. Here's part of his
bit. I do not sext one another. No judgment if you do. We just don't sex. What we do is we send one another properties on Zillow or Trulia. That's like our dirty talk.
Are you?
Okay, so that's how he sort of sets it up, and then he goes on to talk about they send each other pictures of properties. Well, if you watch Saturday Night Live.
Looking for something to spice up your life?
Oh, yeah.
3 bedrooms, 2 bathrooms. You are a bad girl.
The guest house has its own little kitchen. Oh.
800,000? You are nasty. Who likes a big backyard? Who likes a big backyard?
All right, you basically see that they took his bit, they turned it into a little video, and what's the guy want, Tom? He's won an apology?
He asked for $1 million from NBC, but he says that he realizes he hasn't heard back from NBC and doesn't expect him to, and so he says he did that on purpose, because $1 million, it's clearly a joke. And what he says is he's mimicking, in effect, Dr. Evil from the Austin Powers movies. Apparently he claims that character, Dr. Evil, is based on Lorne Greene, because it was written by, an SNL alum. So he thought it was kind of a clever quip and dig, knowing full well he's never going to get credit. In fact, it's been suggested that this might be the best thing that ever happened to him. He's not going to get, hired by NBC at this point, but he probably has gotten more recognition now for his own little YouTube channels of comedy bits than ever before. He did a show called Cut Up, and that's from 2019. That's what this was ripped off from. And then it launches into this long discussion about this happens all the time, they claim, on Saturday Night Live, that they pick up little people's jokes and then turn it into multimillion-dollar sketches. How can you compete? And you don't dare criticize NBC because you'll never work again in this town. That's kind of the fear, because clearly something like Saturday Night Live is a huge get. Just to give you some, 100,000 people did see his cut-up show. But 3 million people watched that particular sketch on SNL last Saturday. And I also think the reason it's gotten any kind of notoriety, it was one of the best sketches of the season. It was really a clever sketch by SNL. They picked up his idea. It would be nice if they could throw him a bone, maybe, throw him 100,000 or something just in thanks.
Right.
But I doubt if that'll happen.
It's the highest form of flattery, Tom.
It's true. It's true. But the higher form would be $1 million.
All right. Tracy Taylor says it is a slipping and a sliding, and it's a hard way to get home for a lot of people.